You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Ah, yes. Rod Stewart. You wear it well.
Thank you.
Here on the Pinto and White Shadow Show podcast, 045.
Yeah.
045. Brad Jones, my co-host, the White Shadow, is doubling down on his nickname and wearing a white t-shirt.
That's
into
true.
Studios. As am I.
Was that weird? It might be weird that we both happen to be wearing plain white t-shirts.
Not really. If
no.
we were in the band plain white tees, it
yeah.
would work perfectly.
True.
But it is better than this. I coach a pop-up baseball team, little 7-8-year-olds
okay.
in Moorhead, and was there tonight.
Poor kids, my gosh.
I know, I just horrible people. Anyways, we're there, and, well, you know, I'm tossing. It's underhand pitching
sure.
is what we do, is pop-up. And so as I'm tossing to these kids, I kind of look out, and I see some of the parents that have showed up, and they're there to cheer their kids, you know, moral support and everything, you know, cheer them if they catch a baseball one every 50 throws.
Sure, yep,
they do a great job. One of the parents, I assume he was a parent, is there wearing the old school style of the white tank top, the wife beater, I guess is what they call.
Okay.
I don't even know what that is. Just the white tank top.
A white ribbed tank top,
yes.
I think, would be the more political correct term.
Oh, no.
To
I
use.
Mean, they call them those.
I know.
And, and he was wearing just that with the and one. Sports shorts.
Okay.
And the old school Adidas that were like the retro Adidas back in the early 2000s that everybody had. They were
okay.
just plain with the little stripes on there. You could get them in every single color.
Yeah.
He was rocking that with, I believe, a platinum chain. This guy was my hero because he went so far back into the
wow.
what is acceptable to wear out that it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe that he had wore something.
Turn your phone off.
To that nature. What? I can't have a Vib?
No.
Sorry. I'm sorry that I'm getting Snapchats.
This is unprofessional.
I'm sorry. I'm getting
okay.
I'm trying to tell you about the the guy with the platinum chain and the tank top and the and one shorts. And ones aren't even in existence anymore as far as clothing is concerned. They don't even sell anything new, at least not up here.
Yeah.
That I've seen. So he's rocking that out. It was just beautiful. That to me is so much more daring when it comes to how far back you can go into your closet and reach
sure.
back into what is acceptable to wear than what we're rocking right now. And I wore a sweatshirt in, and I'm killing it, chilling it with the Pirates baseball official Pittsburgh Pirates hat. So
true.
My style is much more chill than his is.
Oh, gosh.
Am I done yet? Can I stop?
Can you please do?
I felt like it made sense.
Okay.
So. Well, welcome to the 045 yeah. podcast, the Pinto and White Shadow Show here on KFGO.com. If you want to find us on Twitter, I'm at PintoKFGO. Brad Jones is
at the Bison Guy.
You can email us at pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. Leave a comment on the comment section under the podcast page at KFGO.com or find us on iTunes as well, Pinto and White Shadow. To lead things off here, we have a couple of things, a lot of things to get into,
yes.
but a couple of things we'll make mention. Make sure to tune into next week's podcast. We're going to have a big announcement as far as the podcast is concerned,
yes.
Pinto and White Shadow are concerned. A lot of things are going to be happening for Brad Jones and myself, so that'll be something to make sure and check out when we are just check it out next weekend.
Yes.
We'll give you a little bit of a heads up on that.
Yes. We should apologize for last week. Because
yeah,
there wasn't
just
one of these. It just kind of didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
We had scheduling conflicts, and it just didn't end up working out. So
and my softball got canceled on Wednesday, and I was heartbroken.
Yeah. So really, it was Pinto's fault.
Yeah, it totally was my
yeah,
fault.
We played softball last night. We play slow pitch league Monday nights. And we were down at the Anderson Complex on 45th, and the right center field was basically a lake. First ball,
oh boy!
First ball that was hit of the game was a line drive to right center. The right center guy takes one step up, he goes, he hits the ground, and you'd think he fell right in the middle of a slip and slide because it was just a huge splash. Good for us, but
How do you not cancel games then?
I mean, everything out. The infield was all right. The infield was better than what we played in a tournament on Saturday, but that was. really kind of funny, actually. Oh, but well, yeah, that was what we got to how things started last night.
I don't know if you guys ever had this in high school. We had sometimes where our baseball fields we'd go to were so bad in certain areas in the outfield they'd have them marked off.
Oh, sure.
Little ropes or whatever.
Yeah.
Automatic ground rule double if it landed in there.
Red Willow softball tournament. If anybody's ever played softball up at Red Willow, they've got that on their main field or center field. They've got it roped off.
Yeah, and if it goes into that area, automatic double because you can't go in there. And so, yeah, I saw that a couple times during baseball. That, to me, that's what you do. If you hit it into right field, all right, automatic double. And I think it would make honestly, the game a little bit tougher because
it was a lot more fun when our right center field, kind of a bigger dude, so when he hit, we laughed at him a lot. That probably wasn't nice.
It works.
But it was funny. Really all that matters.
So I get to play softball tomorrow, weather pending.
Yes.
Because we missed it last week, and I was really upset. And the week before, we got absolutely crushed. So I've been without softball for the last couple weeks with this bad taste in my mouth, and you guys are already stopped caring about softball, much like people around here don't care about the World Cup.
Wow.
Well, isn't that
true?
Wow.
Moved right in. You know what's funny? My dad and I went to B-Dubs on Saturday night to watch the UFC fights, which ended up being awful other than one guy almost ripping the other guy's arm out of his socket. Most of the fights ended up being pretty bad, but there was one of the soccer games going and a couple of exciting moments. I think it was the Ivory Coast game. Ivory Coast scored like 2 goals in 10 minutes when they were down 1-0. And my dad's comment was, "Do people really care about this? Something?" What was the question he asked? He just kind of went, "Huh." And there were, I don't know, it was 10 people maybe in the South B-Dubs that had that reaction. But there's a few pockets. By the way, after my trip to Britain, it's football. It's not...
No, it's soccer
no,
here.
No, it's football.
No, it's soccer here.
Trust
and
me.
Forever will be soccer here.
Trust
I don't
me.
Care what it is
I've,
anywhere
I've been
else.
Overseas. I'm cultured. It's football.
Okay, so what do they call European football? Or the European Football League when they
defunct
had it.
Is what they call it.
True. So I'm just curious because I don't think a lot of people care about soccer. I think the World Cup is one of these things that everybody else out there gets really excited about, and the USA goes, if we're in it, all right. If we win, hey, if we lose, whatever. You know, there's no real passion for soccer in this country. And even if there is for a month, it just quickly goes away after that month.
Yeah. And it is. It's kind of one of those things. We talked about the girls with the LA Kings a couple of weeks ago where, we're going to wear the LA Kings jerseys and it's going to be all fun and wonderful. And to the casual sports fan, that's what it is. I think soccer in that sense is similar to hockey. You're going to have your pocket of people that are insanely passionate about it and who just don't understand why people don't like it. And there's probably a lot of the fans who, when you get those bandwagon fans, they don't want you anywhere near their sport.
Right.
Because, nope, you don't get it. We don't want you bandwagoning. It's just ours. And you get those people that are truly passionate about it. But, yeah, other than having an excuse to chant USA, USA, especially in this area, people just don't really get into it as much.
You know,
and it's a vocal minority, but it's still a pretty vast minority.
The one thing you're going to notice here, the United States winning on Monday night, beating Ghana, you're going to get people that are going to kind of go, oh, okay. You know, I like winning. I like bandwagoning.
Yes.
And then if they hop on and say the United States somehow beats Portugal, they're going to get into this knockout round. Well, into that knockout round, you've got a chance at the World Cup. And in the United States, one of the few countries, if not the only country, that just does not care about the World Cup. The World Cup is the world's biggest stage for athletics. It is much more popular. Well, I won't say much more popular, but it is more popular than the Olympics. So when you talk about the world stage, everybody is watching. I mean, people in Brazil care about what everybody else is doing. People in Germany care about Ghana, and they care about Portugal, and they care about the United States because they're in their group. It's just, it's different everywhere else.
Okay, let me ask you this. For the, how many people do you think watched the
World Cup?
The USA-Ghana match.
Here in the United States?
United States.
Wasn't the ratings something in the 12s? It was higher than the NBA Finals and the NHL Finals. I know that much.
It wasn't a 12. You're a little high there. It was a little over 11 million, so it drew a 6.3.
Oh, I think I was thinking 11 million as 12. 6.3, but that was a higher rating than...
It's a huge rating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just scrolling through the...
Because we had it on the on KFGO earlier that it was a higher rate and more people are watching the World Cup.
Yeah.
And I understand that. I do, because, again, you have to remember this. You're talking about a country, not just a specific team, where if the Chicago Blackhawks are taking on the New York Rangers, it's two specific cities.
Yeah.
But you encompass everybody when you're doing the USA. So everybody can be a fan. Doesn't really matter. You don't have to worry about, oh, I don't like this player, I don't like that player. You like them because they wear red, white, and blue. So you're going to get more fans that way. Two, how easy of an excuse is it to go, well, I'm going to be sick today, or, hey, I'm going to get off work early today so I can go to...
And it was a decent time. It was you turn on or go, probably more likely, grab your buddies from work, head to a bar, and, you know, go watch. So, I mean... You know, I'm glad it's you know, and I think there's people that like to bash on soccer fans. I you might do that. I can see that.
I have no problem with them.
and I'm not going to either. But it's, you know, it's like you said. It's wake me up when the whatever the MLS Cup is. That, I don't know if is that what they play for.
I have no idea.
Maybe when that draws a big number once every 4 years. I mean, it's the Olympics. Yeah, people get behind it, but...
Exactly, and that's how it's going to be, but it's not going to change people's passion for soccer throughout the United States. The only thing I can see happening here is if, by some miracle, the United States wins the World Cup in a very dramatic fashion, and they do it with a player that the United States can go, that's our poster boy.
Yep.
You know, becomes a hero.
Yep.
And then you look at it and go, okay, soccer is going to pick up here. I think that would be the only thing the United States that would happen to turn soccer.
The biggest problem for me is that for most sports, the best players come to play in the U.S. Basketball, even hockey, which isn't even, you know, it's Canada's sport, but the league is based in, or the, you know, the majority of the teams are in the U.S. Football, basketball, baseball. The best players come here to play. If you're the best soccer player in the world, you go to Europe. And that's going to be the hard part, is that, you know what, we're a little bit snobby here with our sports. We want to see the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why AAA baseball is AAA baseball. We want to watch the major leagues. And that's, I think, going to be one of the hindrances of that, is the best players, if they're really that good, they go play somewhere else. I think, to me, that's the biggest thing that is going to slow soccer as much as it will in the U.S.
Now, when I talk about passion for it, and we've gone much further with this than I would, but that's fine. I'm talking about more people playing and maybe more athletes getting into it. One person made a comment about why the United States isn't better at soccer, and he said, well, when you think about other countries... Their best athletes play soccer.
And this is a Malcolm, I'm sorry to cut you off here, this is a Malcolm Gladwell theory, or a Malcolm Gladwell topic that he's discussed in his book, is that if you are a world-class soccer player in Great Britain, there is almost a 100% chance that you're going to be given every opportunity to play soccer, and that's what you're going to do.
Right.
If you're the best soccer player in U.S., there's a chance that, you know, you're going to have other opportunities. You're going to be a good athlete, and you'll maybe look to basketball or look to baseball or look to something else. So you're not utilizing the top level of your talent. Whereas in other countries where soccer is the focus, the top level of talent is going to focus there. So your percentage is much higher.
Yeah. And you can see that too with athletes in the United States, how they can kind of switch from on or off. We'll talk about Tony Gwynn later, but Tony Gwynn was a very good basketball player for San Diego State, and he's a Hall of Fame baseball player. You know, there are athletes that are able to do different things. They concentrate on different sports, but like you said, you're a world-class soccer player in Brazil. You're going to be a world-class soccer player for your entire life. You're not really going to go play basketball. You're not going to try out for baseball or anything like that. You're going to be soccer.
Yep.
So that's where the United States is unique in that, you know, in that part.
And because there's just more options here. You know what? In some of those European countries, soccer is it. That's the sport. They throw every ounce of passion they have behind one sport. Imagine if the U.S. did that.
Oh, we do. It's called football.
But I'm just saying, if you get rid of baseball, you get rid of basketball, you get rid of every other sport,
right,
and the only sport that you're concentrating on in the U.S. is football, just imagine how nuts it would be then.
Oh, I know. It would be unbelievable. real. You're thinking of guys like LeBron James playing in the NFL.
You're talking about that, but think of the fans. How you could not build the stadiums big enough.
Right. I mean, they're huge in other countries for soccer stadiums. You know,
yes.
110,000, 150,000,
whatever it is. They'd have to be at least that.
Yeah.
Here.
If not bigger.
Yeah.
Ginormous stadium. So it's an interesting dynamic. You only really get to talk about soccer in this country once every three years.
Well, probably
months.
2 years because you get the World Cup and then you'll get Olympic soccer.
Yeah, I think the World Cup more so than
Olympic soccer. I agree. But.
And, you know, if the United States somehow finds their way into what they call the knockout round, where you get past group play and then you get into the knockout round and maybe stun a couple people there, things could look good. That to me, is one of the more entertaining parts of it. But forget all that. We've got our soccer out of our system, and so we'll move on from there, and we'll get into
local.
And, of course, the big local story is Gene Taylor, the athletic director for NDSU, taking a job with the University of Iowa. Deputy Director of Athletics will be his title. A couple of things to state about the position before we get into how we feel about it. The position, which some people had asked me or said to me that, well, it doesn't seem like he's making a step up because he's going from AD to kind of a right-hand man. And that's essentially what the position is at the University of Iowa. He's the right-hand man to the athletic director at the University of Iowa. Gary Barta, I believe, is his name.
NDSU grad.
Yes. And with that position, the pay raise is not going to be that significant. Dean Bresciani, the president of the NDSU, was asked, is the pay raise going to be larger for Gene Taylor? And he said, no, it's not going to be significant. Did a little research. Gene Taylor, in the last fiscal year, was making something like $211,000 at NDSU, according to public records through the state. The University of Iowa has created this position specifically to have Gene come in and take over there, but Iowa State has it, Ohio State has it, the University of Texas has it. To give you some kind of indication, you know, guy at Ohio State's making, I believe, $250,000, something like that. Guy at Texas is making $311,000, but again, Texas has more
biggest
money.
Biggest budget of any college, most revenue
of any college athletic department. So the move for him is not about a step up like it was with Saul Phillips moving to the University of Ohio, and like it was for
Not a step up in pay.
No, it's not a step up in pay.
Yes,
no, it's not
correct.
A step up in pay
correct.
Is what I mean.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Like it was for the University of Ohio move for Saul Phillips and University of Wyoming for Craig Bull. But what it is it puts him in a position, and he stated this, he wants to be an AD of a BCS program. When BCS programs look to take somebody, they're going to look to take somebody with maybe a little AD experience, which he has, and he's been successful at NDSU, and they look for somebody who has been in that position, in a BCS high administration position. He'll have that on his resume. That'll be a big deal for him. I think eventually he'll be an AD somewhere. The way this works, you don't know. You know, ties sometimes work. It worked here, obviously, for him and Barta. But, you know, he went from Navy to NDSU. So, again, he'll find a position as an AD. He'll be successful there. He'll be successful in this position. And we wish him the best of luck. Were you surprised at this move? Or maybe a better question is, what part of it surprised you, if any?
We'd have to go back into the podcast archives. It wasn't that long ago that we talked about when's Gene Taylor, and I don't remember which one of the two of us brought it up, but
I believe you did.
Did I? Okay, yeah, and it was thank you. But I mean, it was not a surprise to me that he was going to make a move. And you know, this is, you know, it's not money, but in the same token as Saul Phillips, as Craig Bowl, as Tim Miles, it's that next step to get to those big time schools. You talk about what that next step is. Here it is. That's what this is for him. And congratulations to Gene. What I mean, it goes back, and it's the same conversation. If they had given us, okay, Gene's going to give you this, but then he's going to leave at a time where there's a lot of transition in the athletic department, will you take it? Yep. Yep, go ahead and sign me up for that last 13-year run again.
What he leaves behind here at NDSU is nothing in really a transition as far as, okay, so the team is getting better, they're going to get to a point here. What he's leaving behind here at NDSU is established, or a program at Division I, programs at Division I looking to become established as, you go to NDSU to get the better job.
Yeah.
And that's what NDSU wants to become. With Craig Bull leaving to Wyoming, Tim Miles now at the University of Nebraska, Sal Phillips in the University of Ohio. Coaches around the country want to look at NDSU, and NDSU wants them to look at him as a mid-major program you go to build up your resume. Every mid-major in the country, if you're a basketball program, strives to be like Gonzaga University. Football-wise, FCS, this is the cream of the crop. As an FCS football program, it does not get any better than what NDSU has. Budget-wise, money-wise, statement-wise, I mean, it's there. The only thing that I could have seen keeping Gene Taylor around would have been if President Bresciani came to him and said, we're going to try to make the move up to an FBS. We want you to be around for that because we have the most confidence in you guiding us there. We're going to try and up your salary a little bit. And maybe because of this move, it'll help you move on to a BCS school as an AD. That to me would have been the only thing that would have kept Gene Taylor around.
And I don't think that's the right move for this school right now.
I don't think the school wants to go there right now. I think that it's going to be a question they're going to have to answer in the future. But
and we're taking a right turn here with that conversation.
The future was, who knows what the future holds for this school. So with him leaving, he leaves behind, you know, three-time national champions, the BSA in transition to the Shack, you know, the renovations there.
And 9 postseasons this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing. What else are you going to do? You know, he's gotten the right people in place. He's made the good hires. And really, that's kind of what we talk about. The NDSU's track record of making the right hires is so strong over the last 15 years. They've whiffed, what, once? We can say, you know, Coach Dehoff was probably not a good hire. After that, I mean, you know, where else do you say, boy, they really things have not gone well?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing you could think about is the drop-off they've had in volleyball from Hector Stocker to Kerry Thompson.
But even
again,
then,
that was a mid-season transition thing.
Yep.
Came out of nowhere. And I guess what we saw last year is NDSU make progress. I mean, you're talking about changing complete scheme. You're talking about, you know, the whole, just everything about the volleyball team.
So that one we can leave. I think that gets an incomplete as of right now.
But I agree with you.
Yeah.
I do.
But they just, you know, they hire the right people. And you know, I think one of the things that was really interesting and kind of gets back to your point about NDSU becoming a destination for those people wanted to make the leap is Dean Bresciani said he really expects this to move pretty quickly. Because,
plum job, I believe is what he called
plum
it.
Plum job, he said, you
several
know what,
times.
We don't, I don't, you know, he said, I'm expecting to start getting resumes almost immediately. I don't think this is going to have to be, we're going to have to hire a search firm and have to go through all the stuff because I think we're going to get really good candidates really early. And that's interesting to me because my guess is that means that, and I'm sure he always does, he's probably been gathering names ever since Gene came and said, and maybe even before that, Gene came and said, hey, you know, I'm talking to Iowa here, just so you know. My guess is he, just like Gene always says, oh, yeah, for every coach, I've got a list. You know, I know if this coach leaves, I know who some of my calls are going to be. And my guess is Bresciani probably has a list or at least had gotten some names from Gene to say, okay, Gene, who are some people that you like? And I would bet that that's probably taken place and why they're hoping and likely will move relatively quickly with this.
The two biggest things that the new AD is going to have to handle or see over is number two is the football program. And while that's more in the new coach's hands about recruiting and keeping up the level of success, what the AD has to understand that comes in is go, okay, our first, second, and third priority are the football program here at NDSU. Because if you do not have a good football program or you do not have a football program that pays, your athletic program, your athletic department will suffer.
Okay.
That's two.
Okay.
That's the second thing. The top priority for him coming in is the BSA renovation and the transition for those programs that played in the BSA, women's basketball, men's basketball, and then worked out in the BSA, making sure that they're comfortable, making sure everything works without any hiccups.
Yep. And you touched on with your point number two, what I think is the most important, and you use the word pays. This person's got to be able to fundraise. They got to go get them checks.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's that's going to be a huge, huge part of it. We've seen, you know, they talked about what the athletic budget tripled in Taylor's time here. You got to keep going out, keep finding ways to get that money. And something that I think Gene was pretty good at. And that's going to be a huge priority for this next person. Because, you see, you know, the athletic department's got a good mix. They've got people who've been at NDSU a long, long time. You've got Lynn Dorn as your women's AD. You've got Amy Ruley right down the hall. You've got, you know, a couple of coaches that have been there a long time, looking specifically at Coach Larson in the track program. Yeah. I mean, you've got some people that have been around quite a while. So you've got some of that consistency there. That new person's got to come in, start building relationships very early on, and get them checks.
The other part about it, too, that you can look at and go, coaches shouldn't have to worry about their jobs because, A, they're new, B, there are hires from Gene Taylor, majority of them, if not, I think actually all of them at this point are. And so...
Most of them. Not all of them, most of them.
Yeah, I suppose. I think there's a couple that would still would have been before Taylor's time.
It might be just...
Larson.
Might be just Larson. Yeah, I think Larson might be the list right
so
now.
So even so, you're looking at all these hires. The AD is going to come in and go, I have successful programs across the board. I'm not going to worry about the coaches. I'm going to worry about what I need to do. They'll just take care of their parts. There's no program where you just hired a new coach or a coach has been there a couple years was this guy's guy, let's say, but the program's not doing that well, and now he's got to worry about his job because this new AD has got a guy that he knows could do the job better. There's none of that going on for the first couple of years, at least.
At least,
because you have new coaches across the board. The sidebar conversation that I think will be raised now, Gene Taylor is the last big piece that was a part of the UND-NDSU rivalry in football not being played. Everybody else that had a part in that is gone for both sides now. You know, does that game come back? Because I think part of the game not being played was because Gene Taylor still felt a little bit slighted when UND held a press conference after NDSU announced they're going to go Division I, said we're not going to play him.
Yeah, there's probably. I mean, I think that's still probably. It doesn't sit real well with him, but everything comes back to the, I've said for 45 episodes on this podcast, it always comes back to the same thing, money, because they're not going to lose out on a home game that has really no upside other than people in North Dakota would really be excited to see it happen. Otherwise, what's the upside? You know, you're not going into... you know, somebody else's recruiting base. You're not able to do any of that stuff that you do if you go to a Montana, if you go even down south to some of the schools down there. The upside from just taking the emotion of, man, it would be awesome to see this rivalry renewed, and it would. For NDSU, it just doesn't make a lot of sense right now because you want your BCS game or your FBS game. You want your...
Two home games,
cupcakes. and then you want the conference schedule. Unless again, you think you can go get a recruiting foothold by going in and kicking the crap out of Montana or Montana State or one of these other schools.
Now, this is just purely a prediction.
Okay,
I think that this AD is gonna whoever the new AD is gonna be is gonna make a UND-NDSU home-and-home series happen. And here's why. Because they're... What big thing does he have to take over when he comes out? I mean, we talked about the renovation, but I mean, one thing where he can say, this is what I've brought to you, NDSU. This is what I've given you. This is my stamp as the AD. Gene Taylor got to take this team from... this program from Division II to Division I. And it's a small thing, but within the state, it would be kind of huge. Everybody can talk about how... the rivalry isn't there. It's dead, which is garbage.
I agree.
Still there. So this is what he can come in and go, here you go, NDSU fans. I have given you back the rivalry. Small potatoes, I understand.
And that kind of conflicts with your point about this job being a stepping stone. Because if you say when you're applying for that next job and you say, yep, You know what I did? I got this rivalry back going. It cost us money, but I got this rivalry up and going. And what's a, you know, what's a university president? Really? You made a decision that cost your program money, huh? Interesting.
If you can figure out a way.
Unless you get a donor that says, okay, how much revenue are you losing for the one game where you're playing a home and home?
Right.
Oh, okay. Here's a check for that amount. And you know what? Let me throw a couple $100,000 extra in there. Now what do you think? Okay, if you can get somebody that would not give you the money otherwise, that's the only way that they'll put the name on the dotted line for the check, then I can see it happening. The money's got to make sense.
And I think he'd figure out a way to make the money make sense in this instance, however it may happen.
Like I said, I just don't see it. I still think at some point down the road, NDSU and UND are going to end up in the same conference again. That's going to happen. It's with all the conference hopping that takes place, that will happen. It makes too little sense for NDSU, USD, and SDSU to be in one conference and UND to be in a different conference.
Yeah.
At some point, as many teams are hopping around, moving all over the place, that's going to happen. I would venture to guess within the next 10 years, I think that's going to happen.
You think let's ask you this question.
Okay.
Conference swap or non-conference game between NDSU and UND? What happens first? Because they were close. UND at NDSU with Brian Faison and Gene Taylor. I mean, they were close. We saw the emails.
Yeah, we did. I'm going to take, I know I'm probably taking the underdog pick here. I'm not taking the favorite. I'm going to say a conference game. I really do. I think something along the lines of one of these teams in the, Northern Iowa is going to decide, you know what? We're moving on up. We're going to be the next team. We got a big facility here. We're moving on up to FBS. Right. And then I think UND says, "Oh, over here, we don't have a nickname issue anymore. Next year they're going to have a new nickname because they can, you know, that whatever goofy law that the legislature passed can expires and the team can get a new nickname. Guess what? New nickname here. We don't have those issues. NCAA isn't all over us. Pick us.
Right.
And I think they get moved into the Missouri Valley. The Summit League has been a revolving door. I think
the Summit League part would make more sense.
I can see that happening sooner. I agree.
Yep. I can too. The football will be difficult because you have to think of schools that can make that jump or they go to a different conference because they're losing so much revenue. They got to go to a conference that maybe isn't that competitive or some other odd reason to travel, whatever it may be. I maybe see that, but I see them in the Summit League before I'd see them in the,
I agree with
in the
that.
Missouri Valley.
But I still think that happens sooner than people think. I really do.
It's a good thought to have, or at least it's a good discussion to have because that's going to be, like I said, a sidebar that comes from all this. And it was already brought up by a few local media members that, hey, Taylor's gone. He's the last of the breed that said, we're not going to play UND. UND's not going to play us. This new AD. And like I said, you make a good point about the money. But again, you got to be able to go to, here you go. Gene Taylor was revered by NDSU fans because of him leading this athletic department into Division I and making the right choice as a head coach. And his fingerprints were kind of all over programs within NDSU. Now what's this new AD have going for him? Is it now just become for the AD spot that, all right, I'm here, I'm not going to screw things up?
Just win. Just win and get them checks. That's it. That's the list. Do I get a bell for that? That wasn't even planned. No, I mean, my Marcus from Mayville said, that's the list? Isn't that my line?
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's the list. Yeah. I wish we had a bell for that. So, yeah, best or your favorite moment from the last 13 years that Gene Taylor was the AD for NDSU Athletics?
Oh, man. There's got to be two for me.
Do a three. Because I know there's three.
Yeah. Okay. The first football championship was just the game, the passion. It was a little unexpected that year. As far, I mean, it was a little more, much more so than the last two. The last two were, you know what, you should win. And it's always a lot more fun when it's, we're here, it's a tight game. It's, I mean, it had everything. And so I that one I would say is, was one of those moments for me. Man, and I span most of the Gene Taylor era. I started at NDSU in 04 as a student. So I, you know, I span most of it. The first two that popped into my head were the first national title, the NCAA tournament win over Oklahoma, and then the third's probably game day.
Okay.
I think those are probably the three. I have a couple of honorable mentions. We'll see if you hit them with your three though.
Well, my third one is the completion of renovation for the BSA.
Sure.
Which is huge for the basketball program and everything else. And then with that, the sports complex right next door for indoor track and field.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two major things. And they'll go unnoticed because, well, why do they matter? You're finally separating these sports so they can have their individualism.
Yep.
Or individual places to practice. Number two has to be Kansas State.
Okay.
I mean, getting that game and winning it and doing it on a national stage, national primetime spotlight, that was, I mean, that's big. Because now as an AD, as a head coach, you've looked around and go, here we are, this is NDSU. Who's their athletic director? Who's their head coach? How did they get to this spot? How do they beat Kansas State? That's two. You know, number three for me, I just think of, I don't know, or number one, I should say, not number three, but number one for me has got to be the, it holds a really special place in my heart because I was there, but it's got to be that winning the first Summit League.
The basketball, sure.
The first Summit League tournament with Ben Woodside, and that was the first big stamp for NDSU Athletics in Division I, more so than the football team beating Minnesota because they weren't eligible for FCS, and it was a nice story, but you kind of forgot about that. You didn't have anything to hang your hat on outside of a 10-1 record. Yes, yeah. We beat Minnesota. That was NDSU's kind of big game, but this is where you finally had national radio people, national newspapers, national television going, well, who is NDSU? What do they do? That to me was the moment where they kind of solidified themselves and went, yeah, we know what we're doing here with this Division I stuff.
Sure. The U of M game was the one I was going to bring
honorable
up as
mention,
my honorable
yep.
mention because, you know, there, I understand what you're saying there, but I think that game helped with some of the talent that NDSU ended up getting from the cities of, oh, that's not just, there's no joke up there.
I think,
you know, we're not going to be playing for hoping to get seventh place in the Big Ten. It may be a lower level, but we're going to compete for national titles and we're going to have a chance to knock off some of the schools with bigger names. So I think that was a big help with recruiting. So with both games, with the loss on the blocked field goal in the first year, and then the winning the game the second year. I think those, just as far as moments go, and I will say with my three, I think you're talking, and I'm surprised game day isn't on your list because you kind of vacillated between, I thought you were going to go impact on the program right away when you went with the renovation of the BSA and Kansas State. I thought you were going to go impact. I just went with these are my personal favorites.
Yeah.
Were those three. With Kansas, the game at Kansas being up there, the game versus Kansas at the Metrodome the first year was up there as well, because it obviously didn't have the victory, didn't have the big moment of Woodside hitting the shot, but the atmosphere there was awesome.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. Game day was fun. And, you know, the way I look at it is just that Gene Taylor's a behind the scenes kind of guy, you know, and the win at Kansas State, while he had nothing to do with happened on the field, he did have something to do with setting up the game and making sure it happened, you know. And
but, I mean, same with game day, though. I mean, he had to be.
Game day doesn't happen if Kansas State doesn't happen.
True.
So you got to have one before the other. That's why Kansas State to me is two. But game day was, game day, you can't forget it. So Gene Taylor on to the University of Iowa, wishing the best of luck as the Deputy Director of Athletics. No doubt in my mind he's going to do a great job there at the University of Iowa. By the way, when you look at budgets for athletic departments, from 2012 to 2013 across the United States. Iowa's 11th. It's like $111 million for revenue. Oh, yeah. $1 million. Yeah, a lot of money there for Iowa. NDSU ranks somewhere in the 120th.
Yes.
So you're going to have a lot of money to play with.
Yes.
If you're Gene Taylor or, you know, Gary Barr. So
I'd have a room like Scrooge McDuck.
Yes, exactly. So let's move on to
regional.
Now, the Minnesota Twins, a team kind of, I'd like to say on the fringe, they offensively have hit a little bit of a snag lately. It just seems like they cannot drive any runs. They lost again today. They've scored one total run against Boston in two games, and they've given up a total of three runs. So offensively, they're just, they're non-existent in the last couple games. But you think that maybe the worst thing that they've had going for them the last three-plus years has been their starting pitching. They've tried to sign guys to help them out. Mike Pelfrey hasn't worked. Kevin Correa, even though his last couple starts have been good, he hasn't really worked out to a point where they hoped. Phil Hughes has, for the small sample size that we do have. But then Samuel Deduno, a guy that worked out for a little bit, but he's starting to trail off. Kyle Gibson, young guy, they're going to give him his time. I can go on and on and on. Starting pitching has been awful at the major league level. The AAA team now for the Minnesota Twins has been unbelievable. A couple guys that you're going to recognize. Alex Meyer, Trevor May, two of the bigger prospects in the Twins minor league system that the Twins got via the trade. These are guys that are knocking on the doorstep. Brad, what point do the Twins go for broke with these guys and say, all right, let's bring them up. Let's bring them up now because the AL Central is real bad. We have a shot at catching the Tigers or getting into a wild card spot and making the playoffs and generating some revenue here, and time served be dang, let's get them in. Or do you go, let's stay the course, let's not rush these guys into the majors, and let's make sure that the time that they're ready to be in the majors and start throwing is the same time we get guys like Miguel Sano and Byron Buxton. How do you look at this?
As a general rule, I'm a big picture guy. And it depends on what is your goal. What is your ultimate goal? Do you want to have a team, you know what, we want to make the playoffs, we want to be in contention towards the end of the year, we're looking, that's what we want to be. We want to be the Twins that we've had over the last 15 years. Or do you want to be that team that, you know what, once every 20, 25 years, you know what, we'll be contenders for some of it, but we're going to be World Series contenders when we're there. Maybe 20, 25 years, you hope for a little more ambitious than that. But you know what, we want to make sure that we are World Series contenders, because you know what, we haven't had one since 91. And we've done the playoff thing where we've been good, but not good enough. We want to make sure that we have our guys ready to go. I tend to be more the big picture and say, you know what, I think this team is overachieving. I don't think their hitting is going to make it all the way through. They're a lot of fun to watch this year, but I just don't think they have enough, even if they bring up the young guys, to do anything, to make any damage in the playoffs. I tend to think in terms of not making the playoffs isn't good enough, is, you know, as your ultimate goal. Your ultimate goal is to win the championship. And bringing them up this year is not going to get them closer to that.
Trevor May is 24. He has a 7-4 record with a 2.77 ERA. By the way, the team, the Rochester Red Wings down in AAA, their team ERA is 3.15. So they have just been crushing it.
That's very good.
Alex Meyer, 24, 3.62 ERAs, 4-3. Looking at some other starters, you have a guy they got from the Braves, I believe, through a Rule 9 draft or something. I can't remember what it was, but Chris Johnson, 6-3 with a 2.60 ERA. Logan Darnell, who started 11 games for him, 2.75 ERA. This guy they're going to call up, Johan Pino, is a guy they're calling up. He'll pitch against the White Sox this weekend in a four-game set at Target Field. Here's his record so far this year. 9-1 with a 1.92 ERA. He's only started 7 games. He's been in 14, but he has 2 complete game shutouts already for AAA Rochester. He's not the future. Twins fans. He's 30 years old. He's a journeyman minor leaguer. The reason they're calling him up now is because he's 30 years old. I mean, give him a shot. He's done his time. He's killing it right now in AAA. This is going to be his first major league appearance of his career. I agree with Brad. You keep these guys, you stay the course, because you're not winning a World Series this year. And the reason you have these guys is to have a solid pitching rotation. You can see it in the future. Logan Darnell is a 25-year-old lefty. Chris Johnson, even at 29, can come up and maybe provide a little bit of stability. Who knows? But you've got Phil Hughes, or you have Phil Hughes. You have Kyle Gibson. Alex Meyer is on a pitching count this season, innings count, because his shoulder, he didn't have shoulder surgery, but he had shoulder soreness towards the end of, I think it was 2013 last year, and 2011 he may have had surgery. He's on a pitching count. Trevor may be a guy you see in September when they expand the roster to 40 men. But you stay the course. You keep these guys down in AAA. You let them build confidence. And when 2015 comes around, first full season, when 2016 hits, you're going, we have all our pieces in place. We have Sano. We have Buxton. You already have Danny Santana. You know what he's going to do. We're going to be having Brian Dozier. Hopefully Mauer starts hitting a little bit better. Maybe Josemel Pinto is up and he's going to be hitting bombs. Oswaldo Arcia, he may be a corner outfielder for us. We have pieces in place. Let's go get it. That's what you have to look at if you're a Twins fan. Do not bring these guys up earlier than they need to be. I think that kind of takes care of it there. So let's move on to
National.
That was one of my better segments, I thought.
Yeah, it was.
I think so.
One thing, you're in, you're out, you're on your way. NBA is over. Spurs versus Heat. Spurs versus Heat for the NBA Finals.
I don't know. What, were you trying to imitate somebody there? Or?
And I don't care.
Okay.
Your thoughts on the finals, which was over relatively quickly. We both thought Heat.
I knew I was going to regret whatever decision that I made, and I kind of made a cop-out pick, and I knew it as I was doing it, because I said, you know, it seems dumb because the Spurs were 5 seconds away from winning it last year. They're better this year. The Heat are worse this year. Why am I picking the Heat other than I think LeBron James is that good? LeBron James wasn't that. He was good. He wasn't that good. He was a man on an island.
Yeah, and the Spurs were an unbelievable machine. I mean, they were... I've never seen a team play that efficient before. It was unreal.
It was... I mean, there's a play that I remember, and it was... I can't remember if it was game four or game five, but Thiago Splitter caught the ball off of a pick and roll, and he was... I don't know, 5 feet from the basket, maybe. He turned. There was a couple of feet of space and Shane Battier coming over to catch him on the rotation. When if you're Thiago Splitter and you're 6'10", 6'11", whatever he is, and Shane Battier is coming over and you're that close to the basket, what would be your first thought?
Oh, my goodness.
Score, right?
Right.
Let's put it down. He didn't even look at the basket. He turned and he fired a bullet pass to Danny Green on the right wing, who was in the perfect window. They knew where the rotation was coming from. They knew where he'd be. Hit Danny Green, who splashed a three. And that was just, I mean, it was, the game was over. It was checkmate. They didn't even have to look. They knew where the rotation was coming from Miami. They knew where the shooter was going to be, and they knew what the right pass was. And it was incredible to watch. So much fun to watch a team that played together so well and that just they just do things the right way. And it goes to the big hypocrisy with sports fans in general. You know what? We absolutely, you know, we want our teams to be this. We want our teams to be this. We want our teams to be this. Well, the Spurs have been that for 15 years, and we just yawn at them. The Heat are everything that we hate, and we watch them and watch them and watch them and watch them. And I say we just as sports fans in general. And I just, I don't know, speaks, I think, to a bigger point, but it was hopefully people watched San Antonio and just enjoyed what they got to see.
It was fun to see all these guys come out and read some of the stories about them. The biggest thing I took from this NBA Finals, Kawhi Leonard and his emergence, I hope, on a much larger stage. NBA Finals MVP. But the reason I hope is because the guy, he's quiet about what he does. He's not boisterous. He's not loud. Not that Parker, Ginobili, or, yeah. or Duncan are overly emphatic about stuff, but this guy is supposed to be the fourth lead, yep. essentially, on this Spurs team. And he's been their best player for the better part of a year now.
He's their most versatile player. I think Tony Parker is still their best player.
He was definitely their best player in this NBA Finals. I think he was the best player for majority of their season.
I still think Tony Parker is the guy. But he was asked to do more on both ends.
I think this was
Parker
the passing of the torch. I think this is, I mean, Tony Parker, that's it. It's time for Kawhi Leonard to take over the team. These guys are...
What does that mean?
I mean, it's time for Kawhi Leonard to be the offense, to be the defensive stopper, and take over. And be the guy they look for to be the big-time scorer when the game is going to the end. I mean, he's got to be the big-shot guy.
That's still Parker.
I don't think so. I really don't think so.
And they're big-shot guy. They don't really have a big-shot guy. They have four or five big-shot guys. The Spurs are never going to be that team and who knows, maybe this group won't be there next year. If Duncan and some of these guys ride off into the sunset, okay. But their crunch time guy is the open guy. And Parker still drives the boat on offense. I mean, that's the way it is.
He's the point guard, yes. I just don't think he is their best player anymore. I think Kawhi Leonard is.
If you're going to talk both sides of the ball, yes, I'll agree with you there. But I still say Tony Parker is their most important guy.
Okay, I don't know what
semantics
gonna,
maybe, but
right, and I don't know what's going to happen. And that's to me. I mean, you don't have to talk much about the finals because what are you going to say? Spurs whitewash. I mean,
they did. They just dominated, crushed it.
The bigger questions now are the offseason, which is going to be very interesting in the NBA, from the NBA draft to what happens before the NBA draft to, I mean, what's going to happen? We'll start here. What's going to happen with the big three? Is this it for them? The big three meaning Chris Bosh, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade. Do you think this is it for them?
No, I don't think so. I think they wait one more year. I think they just opt in and pick up that last year on their contract and go through and then do free agency next year. When, who else is a free agent?
Chris Paul? Nope. I don't know. I know not Melo.
Nope. Think a little more locally.
Kevin Love?
There you go.
Yeah, but...
Interesting, isn't it?
Well, it is, but here's the thing. I don't think Love stays with the Timberwolves past this year. I think he gets traded before the end of the year.
Well, and that could change things, yeah. I think they do one more year in Miami. They've been there's four straight finals. The East is still
two teams.
Exactly. So you're still at the very least looking at a pretty easy shot to the finals unless Derrick Rose comes back healthy and Chicago makes a run. I still don't see Indiana. Maybe they make that leap next year to get Miami. I don't know that they're quite there yet.
Yeah,
and I don't know if they will be next year.
Indiana to me is the only team. Chicago, Derrick Rose has to be healthy. Toronto was the 3 seed, but they're so young, and that's
a big drop off.
They're 2 to 3 years away from even thinking about competing with Miami.
So that's the reason I think that they see the East and like any of them. What else are you going to do outside of going to join either the Clippers? Oklahoma City or San Antonio, what's a better shot at winning?
Well, here's the thing you have to remember is you look at the way that Bosh and Wade played in these NBA finals, and if you're LeBron, you're going, what am I doing here? Do I really want to hang on one more year with these guys? Not only that, but this roster, because it's so old.
Well, keep in mind, there's only two players on the books for next year right now. It's and neither for very much money. It's Birdman, and who's the second guy? I'm not sure who the second guy, but it's another role player. I mean, a small salary guy. So I mean, the roster is not going to look the same next year.
Okay, but who are you going to go out and get? Because you already have these guys like Bosh. Let's just say, for instance, let's play devil's advocate. You get Bosh, you get Wade, you get James.
Yep.
Now, it's been proven that you need other players. You can't just go out with those three and throw out a bunch of scrubs. Well, their biggest concern if they get those guys back is we need a point guard.
Yep.
We need a point guard like yesterday.
They've got a lot of money to play around. You know there's going to be people that are going to want to play. And again, I ask, what's option B?
Option B is, all right, I'm going to team with somebody else.
That's what I'm saying. Who?
And that would lead into the next question, Carmelo Anthony. Does he fit? He's going to be a free agent. I think that he's going to find a place where he fits to win because this is the landscape of the NBA. It's you and a buddy.
Yep.
And maybe another buddy.
Yep.
And you're going to go win titles.
I agree. But again, I ask you, where is the most likely place for Melo to land with these guys?
With these guys, that's a good question.
It's Miami.
But now you're asking these guys to restructure contracts, which would mean...
They won't have to. Well, I mean...
They'd have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would have to.
But they're doing that already. They've done that once. And really, how much money is LeBron? What percent of his earnings is he really making on the court versus off the court?
Again, he's making more off the court than he is on the court.
Michael Jordan, I believe during one of the title runs, was the sixth highest paid player on his team. He was making, you know, he had all the money that was coming in off the court. Same thing with LeBron. You know, I'm not going to say that he's going to do something like that, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. Now Wade might be the stickler in that because from whatever you want to believe with what you read, he's not quite as interested in doing that. Bosch, absolutely, he's in. My guess is LeBron would be in. Wade, I want to get them checks because he knows that those days of getting them checks are starting to run low for him.
Who's going to pay him enough money to do that?
Miami's the team. And another thing to keep in mind too, the salary cap is going to be going up and going up quickly. I believe next year it's going up $5 million.
Okay,
that's a big jump.
Here and again, let's say this all works out in Miami's favor. Does Carmelo, who to me is the kind of the wild card in all of this, because if you're the Heat, if you're LeBron James, who again he's the main player, he's got to look at and go, I just want to win titles.
Yep.
I mean, I'm the best player in this league. I know that. Been proven for the last decade, pretty much.
Yep.
I just want to win titles.
Okay.
What gives me my best shot?
There's your question.
Does the reconstruction of all these contracts, staying with Miami, staying with Wade and Bosch, do that? He really has to sit down and think long and hard about that, because even if they reconstruct all these contracts and figure out a way to bring Melo in, does that leave enough for other pieces of the team?
Okay, and that's fine. But let's say that Melo doesn't come in, and let's say that they still, you know, drop their contract down, and they bring in, you know, instead of one Melo, they bring in 3, 4, 5 guys that are to make that team deeper. That's still when you look at the options of what gives you the best chance to win, Miami's still the best option. I'm not saying it's going to happen where it's going to guarantee them a title. But unless you're joining one of those top 3 or 4 teams in the West, there's not a better option. There just isn't. Because there's no, you know, who else is going to be out there? What other big names are going to be out there? Oklahoma City, they're capped. The Clippers, they're pretty much capped. San Antonio, not going to happen. Houston, they're pretty close to capped, and they've already shown they don't want to pay the luxury tax.
He's not going to Portland.
I mean, I ask you again, where is option B? You can criticize option A all you want to, and that's fine, and there's legitimate arguments to be made as why there's holes there, but find me an option that gives them a better chance, and I'm going to tell you you're not going to find one.
LeBron James going to the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, okay.
The best
chance
to win a title.
Okay.
There's youth there.
Yeah.
Boy, I'd be a pipe dream.
So,
hey, he's friends with Drake. Okay. Drake's a huge Raptor fan.
Stop it.
There's the recruiting.
Stop it.
That makes sense.
Gunderson? Stop it.
Okay. We talked about this too, and because I don't think the big three thing is going to be figured out. And I mean, the Heat is probably, like you said, the best option. Got over it 100 times.
Yep.
Carmelo Anthony, like I said, kind of a wild card in all of this. He is most likely going to be the most coveted free agent out there.
Yes.
My question is, if you had your choice, if you looked at it and went, okay, any team can have Carmelo Anthony in the NBA.
Yep.
What other superstar does he fit in best with?
Easy answer to me,
okay.
Honestly. And it's Houston.
Oh, okay.
With Harden and Howard. Because Howard, he likes the ball, but he doesn't need the ball to win.
Mm-hmm.
Harden has proven that, you know what, I can be a second, third banana. I'm fine with that. Did that for a few years in Oklahoma City. And I've shown that, well, I didn't exactly win when I was the primary guy here. I didn't win a playoff series these first couple years. and I can still be the primary ball handler, and then I've got an elite scorer to go along with. They're going to be, that would be an awful defensive team.
Oh, it'd be horrible.
It would be brutal as far as an offensive team.
Why even play defense?
Our defensive team. But as far as where he fits in, because everyone says Chicago, 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 Tibbs is going to pull out whatever hair he's got left on his head trying to get Melo to play defense. I mean, we're going to have a Stan Van Gundy, Dwight Howard type situation if Thibodeau is going to be coaching Carmelo Anthony. That does not end well at all. I think Houston, they're okay with running and gunning. I think as far as just if we're taking money out of it and we're saying what makes the most sense for him, to me, that's the team.
Again, like I preferenced, had a choice, I think that it would be the Clippers. Chris Paul, Blake Griffin.
Yeah, okay.
You have a little bit of a team. You have a team that can run.
Yeah.
And then you have your elite scorer in a guy like Carmelo Anthony. Not only that, Chris Paul is going to do the majority of the work on offense and be able to find you in spots that make your scoring easier.
Okay.
And that's the thing is Anthony, he's one of these guys that he likes isolation. You've seen it with the Knicks. He'll get the ball and hang on to it for 15 seconds or whatever. But when you look at an offense and you go, I'm a scorer, the best thing you want to do is you want to be able to score easily or be given the ball in a spot where, okay, I can score from here. I can do a lot of things from here. Chris Paul can do that for you.
And Doc Rivers is going to be the kind of coach that will have his attention.
Yep.
That's one thing I would say in Houston. McHale, legendary player, very good coach, I think good to very good coach. But does he have the stature to get the attention of Carmelo Anthony instead of Carmelo Anthony saying, screw it, I'm going to shoot.
Right.
Whereas Doc Rivers might be able to yank him to the sidelines and have enough clout in that organization where coach versus player, they might pick coach.
The other part of it, too, is Doc Rivers as a coach used to coaching some big egos.
When oh, yeah.
Think of Kevin
oh,
Garnett
yeah.
and Paul Pierce.
And Chris Paul and Chris Blake Paul. Griffin.
Right,
I mean,
exactly. So he understands how to coach
yes.
that. Now, these are all pipe dreams.
Yes.
Again, as I preference.
Money-wise, who knows
right.
what will happen with that. But if we're just saying, we want to put you on a team where this would be fun, I think both options would be pretty fun to see. I have, by the way, and I'm going to save this for next week. I have a rant about everybody complaining about these four guys potentially joining forces.
Okay.
I have a
I
rant.
Hear
I'm
going
to save it for next week.
Good, because I have an issue with it, too.
Okay.
But before we move on to the next topic, which is a little bit of baseball, we have...
You've got mail.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Really? Who do we got?
Came in 2 hours ago, actually.
Really?
So
okay.
an hour ago, once we started this podcast.
Okay.
Going into the NBA Finals, writes Marcus from Mayville,
okay.
I was pretty convinced the Heat didn't have this year because of the point I made early on in the season, which was team-wide tired legs after 4-plus years, yada, 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 watching the playoffs, dominant regular season, so on. There, he goes, the Heat are the oldest team in the NBA, have a horrible second unit. Basically was the Miami Cavaliers against the San Antonio Spurs out there.
Well,
which
let's
is,
not quite go that far.
Well,
but.
Actually, the 2007 Cavs were a better team in the NBA Finals than this year's Miami Heat.
Okay, that's fine. Let's not get carried away here.
So anyways.
Sasha Pavlovic started for that team.
Love Sasha.
Okay, so let's. I get the point. I know you're exaggerating a point,
but let's not get carried away. He was a borderline all-star. Get it right.
Jeez.
The Heat are in dire need of some changes if they want to keep this thing rolling. It's easy to point fingers at a coach, but I really haven't been impressed with Spoelstra. Every game the Spurs won, it was like you were watching a replay of the night before because they didn't change anything. Just let the Spurs carve them up defensively. Let their offensive play hero ball through LeBron. I hope LeBron goes back to the Cleveland and the Cavs take Jabari Parker now.
Okay.
Coach part, though.
Marcus, I love you. Stop it. Just stop it. Come on. You got, yes, what? Spoelstra
please,
got...
Please, no! 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 No!
Okay. Take it easy. Yeah, did he get out-coached by Greg Popovich? Yep, him along with 29 other coaches in the league got out-coached by Greg Popovich. It wasn't so... The system that he runs works very well when you have fresh defenders and good defenders, and I think his point about the number of games that they've played over the last 4 years, I think he's right. They didn't have the legs. Wade wasn't healthy, and you know, they had to, their best, most versatile defender outside of LeBron was Shane Battier, and he was done. You know, he had a fork in his back this year. He was done. That I think was more of the issue, was just that they just didn't have the legs to run the type of defensive system that won them the last two titles. Read Zach Lowe. We talk about Zach Lowe a ton. At least I bring him up, it seems like, every other podcast, because I really enjoy his work. But he breaks down the system and how, yes, San Antonio figured out Miami's rotations, and they just weren't quick enough with everything. Even Chris Anderson, who was decent the last year or so down low as protecting the rim, he didn't have the same lift this year on his legs. He was not, shots that he blocked last year, he wasn't getting to. All of that added in, I think it was more so the age and the number of games than it was Coach Spoelstra. He didn't go from being a good coach last year to a bad coach this year.
We move on from the NBA to our last topic of the podcast, and that is Tony Gwynn and his passing away recently from cancer. And I had tweeted out once I saw this, and he passed away on Monday, as we record this on a Tuesday, I felt like he was one of the more underappreciated superstars of his era. 1982 to 2001 was his career length. Am I just too young to remember how much he was appreciated, or am I off base in saying that?
You're probably a little young, but he never winning a World Series doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he made it in, what, 98? He made it twice, I know. Most recently, I think it was 98 when they got swept by the Yankees.
Well, maybe it was only once. I'll check.
He made it twice. I know he made it twice. I think once was earlier in his career. But I know they did make it twice. But 98, you know, so he was underappreciated in a little bit of a sense, especially towards the end of his career, because we were right in the middle of the steroids era, and Gwynn got overshadowed a little bit by the numbers that were being put up. But he was, you look at the numbers, and it's video game numbers. It's silly. I believe his worst season, he hit something like 313 or 318.
I think it was 309, actually.
Okay.
It was his worst season.
And had 40 strikeouts. Was the most he ever had in a season.
Right.
40 strikeouts. It's ridiculous. He never, ever struck out.
The pitcher he faced the most in his career was Greg Maddux. 107 plate appearances against, 94 total batting.
At-bats.
At-bats, thank you. Hit 413 off of Greg Maddux and never struck out against him. And Greg Maddux was quoted as saying, I can manipulate any hitter I want to, except Tony Gwynn.
Yeah.
I cannot do anything against Tony Gwynn.
338 career.
Second highest ever to Ted Williams, who had like 340 for his career.
Yeah.
The guy, the reason I, you said it perfect. The reason I felt like he was
second highest ever is not accurate. It may be after like 1940 or something like that, but I don't think he's got the second highest career batting average. I don't think that's right.
Highest for a career is, oh yeah, Ty Cobb. It might be in the modern era or whatever they say, or for something. Tony Gwynn, most seasons leading the league, 8th. He was only behind Ty Cobb. It might have been modern era stuff, but he was up there. Anyways, doesn't matter. Yeah, Roger Hornsby and Ty Cobb. Now sure. I'm curious where he fits in.
Okay. Anyway, he was really good. I mean, it's really what we're getting at. Okay.
But you hit on it perfectly, the steroid era. And he saw the effects of it firsthand. Ken Caminiti was on his team when Caminiti won the MVP in 1996, I believe.
94.
94 was a strike shortened season.
Okay, yeah.
And so he saw the effects of what steroids could do, not only from him, but Barry Bonds was in the National League. He saw what it could do from that standpoint.
McGuire, Sosa.
Again, the guy just did what he was good at, was spray singles all over the place. That's the other part of it. He didn't hit homers. He was a singles hitter. And he played for the San Diego Padres. How unsexy is that? I mean,
well, in some ways, San Diego's pretty sexy.
Well, but as a sports city.
Yeah, the brown uniforms didn't really help a lot.
But again, you're talking about a guy who played in obscurity when it came to teams. He played on a team that was rarely good, and he didn't do anything flashy. He was consistent. And so when you think of guys from that era, you're going to think of Ken Griffey Jr. You're going to think of Barry Bonds, to a lesser extent because it was towards the tail end of his career. But Derek Jeter comes up because of the Yankees and how good they were.
Yep.
The Braves and all those pitchers. Yes, I mean, he gets overshadowed by those things. Tony Gwynn, one of the top five players of his era.
I mean,
you look at the Gold Gloves, you look at what he did.
Five Gold Gloves.
You look at what he did early in his career and the way he was able to sustain the way he hit and the way he played. Because his body gave out on him, essentially. He got a lot bigger.
He got big, and he still just kept hitting singles.
Yep, and just kept doing. So that's why I say he was one of the more underappreciated players in the majors. Sad to see him go. You can get into a whole thing about chewing tobacco and all that stuff in baseball and how it affects what they do, but we don't do that here on the podcast.
That's not, yeah.
And that's what we shy away from that stuff on the podcast. We'd rather talk about white t-shirts, softball, and World Cup soccer.
That's what we're about.
That's what we do. So thank you again for joining us for the 045 podcast. If you want to find us on Twitter, I'm at PintoKFGO. Brad Jones is
at the Bison Guy.
Find us on iTunes. Find us on KFGO.com. Find us on, I believe those are the ones who play C. We'll tweet this link out. We'll put this thing out on Facebook. Tell a friend about us. And leave us a comment in the comment section at KFGO.com. Remember, tune in next week. Big announcement comes for the future of the podcast,
big.
The future of the Pinto and White Shadow show, the future of White Shadow and Pinto as we know them. Make sure and tune into the podcast, and we'll let you in on a little bit more. So for Brad Jones, I'm Dan Gunnarsson saying thank you very much and enjoy the rest of whatever you're doing. Are you like me now? Are you like me now?